It's time to renew your license, and you have a decision to make. And your choice today could save not just a life, but an entire democracy. So next time you're renewing your license, please consider becoming an organ donor. Specifically, for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Within Ruth Bader Ginsburg's chest beats the heart of our nation. And much like our nation, it's on the verge of complete collapse. As a Supreme Court justice, she's ruled over countless cases. Olmstead versus LC, Obergefell versus Hodges. But now, you're the judge over the most important decision of all. Bader Ginsburg versus the sweet embrace of death. Let's be real. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a real BAMF, a badly ailing Madam of Freedom. She's been a Supreme Court Justice for 27 years and legally dead for 4. But not the 4 you expect. Now, you can legally ensure that a piece of you becomes a piece of her. Her story, that is. When asked by a reporter when she believed there would be enough women on the Supreme Court, Ruth Bader Ginsburg iconically replied, "When there are 9, which is the exact number of Ginsburg clone children we've been growing Never Let Me Go style somewhere in the British countryside." You know, they don't call her the notorious RBG for nothing. It's because her organs are notoriously failing. Much like our constitutional checks on authoritarian power. Be a part of the resistance by resisting your urge to not check yes to donating your organs to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Best of all, you don't even have to wait until a fatal car accident or a presidentially uncondemned act of white terrorism to do your part for the good of our country. You can donate your organs in the comfort of your own home, thanks to our specially programmed surgical drones, the Ruth Bader Ginsbots. Remember, Bader ain't no hater. She's a lover of your organs. And no organ is too small. Yeah, we're a quiver for your liver and pining for spines, but we'll take a spare gallbladder any day of the week. Want to meet Ruth Bader Ginsburg in person? Now you can! When we strap you both up to that freaky-deaky machine from The Princess Bride and steal whole years of your life and put them into Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because objectively, she matters more than you. Think about it. Who the hell are you? She's Ruth Bader Ginsburg. What would be better for the world at this point? Keeping Ruth Bader Ginsburg healthy for 6 more months is more important than anything you will do for the rest of your life. If you could add even 1 more week to the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, your life will have mattered. And now, you do not matter. All that matters is Ginsburg. Ginsburg is the beginning. Ginsburg is the end. From her robes are spun the inky primordial darkness, from whence sprung forth the mewling accident we call a universe. And from her thunderous gavel did light first spark. Before humankind took its first frightened breath, before the moon rose from the sea, before the gods unblinked their eyes, there was Ginsburg. I am Ginsburg. We are Ginsburg. All are Ginsburg. On her shoulders rests our hopes and dreams. In her belly rests our organs. So please, consider donating today!
That was OG Paper Machete contributor Brad Einstein. a non-Hershey nut bar from Pennsylvania, currently holed up in Brooklyn. And this is the Machete Audio Magazine. Here to kick off this week's show is a Green Mill performance by the Chicago musical artist, Jem Tree.
This song is called Awake. Hey. Reaching for the stars again. Grab the sun, now it's in my hands. I think I can. Reaching for the stars again. Grab the sun, now it's in my hands. I think I can. Look, see, I was feeling real hopeless, trying different approaches, trying to gain new focus. The pain was my coaches, reminding me again of the change that sent flames feeling soulless. This shit is bogus. I'm my own damn opponent. Dry bones need them blowing. How did I come alive? Then die? Why would I let this bullshit block what I know I'm growing? Yeah. Patience and persistence, that's what makes the difference. Harder I try, but me up high. You know there's a way with your realness. I thought you once said no ceilings. Keep in mind, don't need ceilings. Sprinting up the thrill and revealing initial intentions, attention. Listen. Reaching for the stars again. Grab the sun, now it's in my hands. I think I can. Oh, oh, oh. Reaching for the stars again. The second verse says, hey, away my blues, yellow shine through. Away brand new day, here make truce. Away my blues, yellow shine through. Away brand new day, here make truce. Truth is, I was dealing with it nonstop. Proof is, your denim in my heart flop. True shit, now I gotta see from up top. Kinda work my fruit, why can't I let my fruit ride? Two shots, peach jumps and down, give me all you got. Higher than Superman, super strength, cop, hate in the earth. Good vibes everywhere, hands up, I'ma work, hit me first, I'm prepared. Look, see, I've been up with some shit. Been running last of my click. Almost finished taking these hits. Yo, we getting even higher. Please don't trip. Anybody got fire like this week? Got a burning desire. Now I'm equipped. Things are looking even brighter. It's lit. Oh, shit. I've been up with some shit. Been running last of my click. Almost finished taking these hits. Yo, we getting even higher. Please don't trip. Anybody got fire like this week? Got a burning desire. Now I'm equipped. Things are looking even brighter. It's lit. Yeah. Reaching for the stars again. I'm reaching for. Reaching for the stars again.
That was Jem Tree, and this is the Machete Audio Magazine, July 18th, 2020. I'm Christopher Pyatt. And on this week's episode, we're going to graze in the grass on topics like Epstein's survivors and the Enlightenment, sports team mascots, Hong Kong, the Beatles, just the works, you know. And we're starting this week's show with stand-up comedy. This set was recorded at the Green Mill in January of this year. We didn't really know what was coming, but this comic kind of knew what was going on, as you'll hear. By the way, this will seem quaint now, but the day before we recorded this, Donald Trump had ordered the assassination of Qasem Soleimani, and we thought we might be going into World War III with Iran. Anyway, here's Vincent Bryant.
Hello. Can you guys hear me? All right, cool. What's going on, Chicago? How y'all feeling? It's good. I lived here for a little while. I'm originally from St. Louis. I lived here like 2 or 3 years. Yeah. Chicago's a great place, but it's very racially divided. It's kind of funny in a sense. Everybody has their own neighborhood, but it's kind of like fucked up because they put Chinatown in between two train tracks. It's like a subtle reminder. It's just like. Y'all did this to yourselves. That's just like. Fuck playing that. That's Chicago. It's a very warm and loving place, but it's a lot of shit that is very subtle. Very even the name of our favorite restaurants. We got Remus, Uncle Remus's Chicken. Have you guys tried it? Good food, but it's a terrible name for a restaurant because Uncle Remus is a fictional character from the 40s. Blackface. They named the restaurant Uncle Remus's Chicken. I ain't gonna call it racist, but it's fucked up. Right? I could open up a brick oven pizza place and name it Anne Frank's, could I? I couldn't. I could not. Because that would be insensitive. What would I sell? Frank's? I don't know. What would be my mascot? A canine? I'm not sure. I love that joke because some people was like, who's Anne Frank? Don't worry. I won't leave you in the dark like they did her. I'll explain. Anne Frank is a little girl that was playing hide and seek and she lost. So, we had to learn about her in school. We're very insensitive around people's culture and food and what we know and all of that. We bully each other until we deliver food that we like. If you're an immigrant, you are being treated meanly until you deliver something delicious. That's how it goes. The Indians gave us curry. The Middle Easterners gave us hummus. We was fucking with Mexicans till they gave us tacos. We love people. Like, we hate people, but we love their food. That's what I'm getting at. Right? Like, y'all love Taco Tuesday. Yes? You love Taco Tuesday, but you want that wall built by Wednesday. Ain't that crazy? Ain't that fucked up? That's because we have Ronald McDonald in office. It is awesome, right? He in there, motherfucker. Somebody voted for him in here. Even if it was for a joke, it happened. I didn't vote at all, so it's kind of like a vote for him, right? Yeah. Oh no, he a smart dumb dude. It's like he don't know shit, but he knows something. It's like, how the fuck did he do it? I'm not mad at him though. He's old. 74. What old person is supposed to be saying anything correctly? I feel like after 60, you should just say whatever the fuck you... That's what most people do after 60. It's just like, hey, I'm going to say what the fuck I feel. We shouldn't have gave him a job. We should have made him a door greeter like the rest of them old motherfuckers. But he's running the president. I mean, running the country, man. He's doing shit. I don't even think he started a war with Iran on purpose. This shit was an accident. He was trying to clock out. And he pressed the button. He was like, oh, shit. I was. Old, man. I don't want to be old. It seems boring. Don't nobody really like you. That's it. You don't care, but it's all your friends dead. You need somebody to talk to. Dog, that dog don't like you. If you know what I'm saying, that's your third dog. If you old enough, you always forget to feed him. Yeah, that dog don't like you. He gonna eat you. I don't want to be old. 72, tap out. Done. It's a good age to die. 72, perfect actually. You ever left the house and your phone's on 72%? He was like, that's good enough. That's exactly how I feel about my life. That's good enough. I've done what I needed to do. I don't want to live be old enough to be relations. That's it comes. That shit is like cancer. It's gonna pop up somewhere. You're gonna become racist one day. If you live in America long enough, it's just like it's radiation. It pop into you. I don't want to be that old. Because racism is the ugliest thing in this country by far.
Yup.
Literally. Now I don't say it for class because literally you've never seen a cute racist in your life. It's always an ugly motherfucker. They hate somebody. They're nobody cute. I was just in Alabama and an old white lady with no teeth called me a nigger. And I was like, aw. There. Whose meemaw is this before I kick this bitch in her back? But you can learn from people that hate you. Pay attention though. Look at take Mrs. Martin Luther King, one of our greatest citizens ever. His greatest influence was Gandhi. What people don't know or may not know is Gandhi hated black people as well. He called us monkeys when he was campaigning for his people in South Africa. Yep. You can learn three things from the situation. One, separate the person from the ideology. Two, Gandhi was a dick. And three, Gandhi was also ugly than a motherfucker. I'm telling you, every racist is ugly. This nigga ain't have no teeth, and he said, monkey, I would kill him with a piece of gum. I swear to God. Promise you. A lot of great men are fucked up. That's the cost of being great. Somebody gonna get fucked over. Somebody is gonna get fucked up. Not only was he a racist, he used to beat his wife. Yeah, this nigga was 86 pounds, walking around in twin size sheet, beating on his wife. I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that situation. Him come home, where is my dinner? Smack her. She's like, I thought you wasn't eating today. What the fuck? This is... Thank you, sir. But it is what it is. We deal with it. Because we're a great country despite everything else that's going on. We do what we do. That's why we live so comfortable. That's why we have this show, because we bomb shit. Anybody doing this in Iran? They not having a comedy show on Saturday. They having a drill. This many people in a public place, they are worried. We chilling. And that's the shit that that's the paradox that we live in. We hate this country, but it's like, ooh, I wish a motherfucker would tell me to go back to where I'm from. I don't know where I'm from. It's quiet. I'll end on a lighter note. Just had a pregnancy scare. It wasn't even really a pregnancy scare. She got pregnant. I don't mind that part. It just got weird. She downloaded an app to tell me what size the baby would be. And it compared it to food as it grew. Ladies, have you ever heard this or seen this app before? Yeah, it was interesting. I thought it was a little weird, but... You know. Baby got up to 7 weeks. She sent me a picture of a chickpea. This is the size of our baby. So I sent her back a bowl of hummus. I was like, crush that little motherfucker.
Vincent Bryant was raised up in St. Louis. So a lot of the way that we've lived for centuries is getting re-examined. One of these things is that for all the recent talk of our country's history of slavery and the abolition movement and the Civil War, we've sort of ignored that sexual slavery, 21st century human trafficking, kind of never actually went away in the way we mean it when we talk about the land of the free. Ghislaine Maxwell's Capture has us talking about this again. The day we recorded this essay from last July at the Mill, Epstein was behind bars. And although we did not know it on this day, he had exactly 4 weeks left to live. Anyway, here's Jessa Crispin.
to talk about the Enlightenment for a minute. That time in French history when all the wig-wearing white men got together agree that, yes, wig-wearing white men really are the smartest of men. And that is because of their capacity for reason. Voltaire used his tremendous reasoning abilities to argue that slavery is acceptable because of the natural subhuman quality of black people. The Enlightenment may have invented the concept of human rights, but it was clearly only white people who qualify as human. Diderot, also being very reasonable at the time, compared women to the apocalypse and called us all devils. Rousseau was so logical that he traveled with a life-size doll as a companion until it got thrown overboard after a very freaked-out crew on a ship thought it was cursed. And these are the founding thinkers, values, and ideas of Western civilization, which is somehow simultaneously the strongest, greatest foundation for life ever created, while also being very fragile and in constant danger. And I don't know if you have heard, but Western civilization is under attack. Western civilization, which has never met another civilization it didn't try to enslave, is being undermined by the same superstition, the same lack of reason the Enlightenment was supposed to dispel. It's been attacked by the values and the traditions of all the Syrian refugees that we didn't manage to just let drown at sea, by Bernie bros, by identity politics, and astrology apps. But there were a few brave men willing to push back against this unreasonable influence. Men like Christopher Hitchens, who saw the Middle East and the Islamic civilization as such a fundamental threat that it wasn't just okay for the US to invade and murder every man, woman, and child we found there. It was our moral duty. Men like Richard Dawkins, who regularly compares brown men to animals, and men like Bill Maher, who isn't technically a man, but instead a 1957 issue of Playboy that achieved sentience when it was bitten by a radioactive men's rights activist. All these proud defenders of endless war, all these brave defendants in sexual harassment lawsuits. And let us not forget Harvard professor Steven Pinker, who named his book Enlightenment Now, I'm guessing after what he screams in his wife's face as he reaches climax. But he also wrote a book about how despite whatever your lived experience is or what you can see on the news every single day, the world is somehow becoming a kinder, better place. And a lot of that has to do with capitalism. And why wouldn't he think that? After all, capitalism created a better world for him, a world with Jeffrey Epstein in it. Capitalism got him access to Epstein's private jet, the one that they're calling the Lolita Express because it's always filled with underage girls. On the list of Epstein's associates, we find not only the deplorables like Bill Clinton and Donald Trump, but also Pinker and his friend, the physicist Lawrence Krauss, two of Enlightenment's strongest defenders. This is where the new atheists and their mortal enemy, organized religion, find their common ground, in the desire to fuck children. But it's okay because Krauss boasted that he only uses empirical evidence to make judgments, and in his time with Epstein, he was able to divine the ages of all the girls surrounding him. He didn't check IDs or anything, but he is confident that there was no one there younger than 18. And Professor Robert Trivers very reasonably argued that girls develop faster now than they used to, probably because of hormones in the milk or access to internet porn or something. So a 14-year-old girl of today is not like a 14-year-old girl of 60 years ago. Today, 14, you're basically an adult. And these Enlightenment defenders' contribution to the world isn't just a series of books that's like Oprah's book club but for incels, nor is it a second generation of intellectual powerhouses like Ben Shapiro, who after that nice woman in the castle guessed his true name, Rumpelstiltskin, was still able to create a second career yelling, debate me, endlessly in the podcast studio he set up in his basement. Their true legacy will be carrying on the tradition of saying when you do something, it's wrong, but when I do something, it's right, whether that be keeping slaves, fucking children, or supporting an apartheid state in Israel. And if you disagree with them, they will call you irrational or overly emotional, and they'll send you rape threats over Twitter. And if we can't defend Western civilization without concentration camps, mass death, and an endless campaign of dehumanization against women, then maybe it's not worth saving. And if most of what you're using your Enlightenment-inspired sense of skepticism and rationality for is to find morbid logical justifications like evolutionary psychology for putting your 60-year-old dick in a girl still in middle school, maybe it's not the powerful force for good you want to pretend it is. All the Enlightenment is there for this man is white men identity politics. But they are right about one thing. The barbarians are at the gate. So when we finally burst through, there's going to be a hell of a mess that we need to clean up.
Hey, hey, hey. Jessa Crispin is from Lincoln, Kansas. She hosts the podcast Public Intellectual and writes for The Guardian. These days, she's shacked up in Baltimore. This week, Washington, D.C.'s NFL team officially announced an upcoming mascot name change deemed long overdue by American Indigenous peoples and their associates. We take you now to the Machete's sports desk.
Good afternoon, folks. This is the first ever broadcast of the Negro League All-Star Baseball Game. I'm your play-by-play announcer, Pete George, joined along by retired Negro League shortstop, Willie Lee Abercrombie. How you doing today, boy?
Yeah, it's a good day for baseball, Mr. Pete.
As the players take the field, let's talk a little bit about the teams represented here today. Willie Lee, as you know, there's been a little hoopla surrounding the name of Colorado's team, the Crackers.
Yeah, Pete. As you know, I used to play for the Crackers, the Colorado Crackers.
That's right. You came over from the Saltines.
Yeah, the South Dakota Saltines. That was a good ball team. They weren't necessarily an athletic team, but man, they sure did hustle.
But Willie Lee, can you see how some people might find the name the Crackers offensive?
Look, Pete, Crackers have a storied heritage that's rich in tradition. Or is that a rich heritage with a storied tradition?
Sure.
Either way, who doesn't love a good saltine?
Okay, well, we're talking about the Crackers, right? But I'm going to guess you'd say same difference.
Same difference.
Willie Lee, you make a great point. And the Crackers have been on top for a really long time.
No doubt. No doubt.
Okay, Willie Lee. But what about the chant? A stadium full of Negroes chanting, "Hey, how are ya? Hey, how are ya? Hey, how are ya?" You don't see a problem with that.
Come on now, Pete. When somebody says, "Hey, how are ya?" you just say, "I'm fine." I mean, come on. Where's it gonna end?
Clearly not at the mascot. I mean, it's not just a cracker, Willie Lee. The tiny lips, the tiny nose, the saggy trousers that some might say represents a lack of derriere. And the dance associated with the mascot. When the music comes on, it's just a series of twists and jerks and movements, not even any sort of rhythmic pattern. Some might find that a little offensive. Can you see that, Willie Lee?
Oh, for Pete's sake, Pete, it's a mascot. Not everybody's a Cab Calloway.
What, who?
A Negro kid from Harlem. You'll find out about him in a few years. Mark my words.
Okay. Willie Lee, can you see how this is upsetting to some Americans?
Yeah, but it's not upsetting to all Americans. I mean, where's it going to stop? You going to change the name of the Wichita Whiteys? Huh? The Rhode Island Round Eyes? The Alabama Rednecks? I mean, come on.
Well, I don't know if you know this or not, Willie Lee, but on the way into the stadium, newspaper boy out front, I grabbed the paper, and I read that Wonder Bread will no longer be sponsoring the Rednecks. That's right. Delicious Wonder Bread.
What the hell? I'll be a monkey's uncle. Wonder Bread is soft and plain with no nutritional value. Man, I'm sure gonna miss them.
What about the fact that some of the players are now starting to speak out about the team names? Like Bingo Long. He has really come under fire as of recent because of his stance against some of the team names.
Pete, I'm going to tell you right now, I used to play with Bingo Long in the Traveling All-Stars, and that boy needs to shut his mouth and keep swinging his bat.
Speaking of Bingo Long, let's get into our starters. At catcher, we have George Dixon. First base, Leroy Grant. Second base, Bingo DeMoss. Third base, Dave Melarcher.
Oh, Dave Melarcher plays third base? Mm-hmm. He is really representing the Houston Honkies well. True. Tell me something. Tell me something. Where did he come over from?
Well, he's a Honky now, but he used to be with the Washington Wasp. Then we have our shortstop, Bobby Williams. Left field is Jimmy Lyons. Center field, Cristobal Torriente. With right field, Jelly Gardner. And your starting pitcher today, Dave Brown. And there you have it. Just about all the teams of the Negro Baseball League are represented here today, except for the New England Patriots.
Play ball!
New England Patriots? They're racist.
That sketch was written and performed by Chicagoans Mars Timms of Pimprov fame and Strangers with Candy veteran Greg Holloman. So, in music news, this week, Ringo Starr and Paul McCartney are reuniting to record and release a new song. And I'm not going to make any judgments on what that might be like or who it might be for. That said, here's a machete take on collaborations with friends from the singer and performance artist, Chrissy Rose.
Sang out of tune. Would you stand up and walk out on me? Let me hear you and I'll sing your song. And I'll try not to sing out of key. I get by with a little help from my I get high with a little help from my friends. I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. What do I do? Oh, when my love is away, does it worry you to be alone? Oh, good. How do you feel at the end of the day? Are you sad because you're on your own? Goodbye, my friends. I get high with a little help from my. I'm gonna try. Hey. Okay. Do you need anybody? Oh, I need somebody to love. Well, could it be anybody? Yeah, I want somebody to love. I get by, I get help, I get friends. So, do you guys watch Frasier? I don't. Would you believe in a love at first sight? It happens all the time. What do you see when you turn out the light? But I'll tell you, but I know it's mine. I get by with a little help from my head. I get high with a little help from my eye. Oh, I'll try, I'll try, I'll try, I'll try. They're still fucking here. I get by. Thank you so much.
Chrissy Rose is originally a Minnesota gal who now resides in Chi. And finally, this week, President Trump signed a sanctions bill against Hong Kong. And we're sure he read the entire bill and nothing bad will come from it. Anyway, we're going to close out this week with an essay about China and Hong Kong from The Machete last August. The voice you're about to hear belongs to Kim Bellware.
Today to talk about Hong Kong. It's a place sometimes referred to as the New York City of Asia by people who have never actually been to Asia. Some things that you may have heard about Hong Kong, besides the fact that it's a small island just south of China, is that the food is awesome, which is true. You may have heard that it's clean and efficient, and that's also true. Simply put, Hong Kong kind of feels like you're living in Blade Runner, but with better lighting and fewer guys who look like Rutger Howard. These things alone are not what make Hong Kong great. To me, Hong Kong is where my family's from. I spent a lot of time there growing up, so I understand some of the general attitudes about the young people who are protesting the police now. During that period of my youth, Hong Kong was generally stable and prosper, and the 60-second history lesson for some context. It was part of the British Empire for a 99-year lease when it was then turned back to the Chinese in 1999. That came an event that was known as the handover, which in 2019 might be a wild geopolitical comedy by Judd Apatow. Hong Kong had been open and thriving, and it eventually became a financial superpower with close ties from countries ranging from England to the Philippines. Meanwhile, China had remained closed to the West for several decades, had a cultural revolution, Tiananmen Square, and a lot of other things the government would like you to forget. And if you live in China, you don't have to forget them because you never heard of them in the first place. So while this deeply global, financially successful special territory goes back to China, and they have their own democratic elections, how is that going to work under a communist superpower? The answer was called the one country, two system solution. And if that sounds like self-delusion wrapped up in good intentions, I'd say it's right up there with everyone who goes and buys a year-long gym membership on January 1st. The crazy thing, though, is for at least 10 years, it kind of worked. You could go to Hong Kong a few years ago, and you still can now. You can get on YouTube, you can get on Twitter, you can go read subversive books. But after a while, China inevitably started to crack down. There's a particular bookstore in Causeway Bay, near where my family lives, and it was known to publish titles that were satirical and critical of Beijing politicians. This is the kind of stuff that would be banned on the mainland. So after the handover, a lot of Chinese tourists would come to Hong Kong for the shopping and access to banned items. Mainlanders would come to the bookstore, and they would read things about their political leaders, and they were either shocked at the level of disrespect shown, or they were curious if what they were reading might be true. In 2015, the solution wasn't to close down the bookstore, and it wasn't to ban mainlanders from Hong Kong. It was to just disappear five of the booksellers. And that's the kind of thing that has been happening ever since. It is a government that is deadly and decidedly undemocratic. The crackdowns then came to school, where there was a crackdown on speaking Cantonese and writing in traditional Chinese. Unlike the simplified form that's preferred on the mainland, traditional Chinese has pictograms and cultures embedded in the characters. Last year, students graduating from secondary schools were forced to take Mandarin language exams as a requisite for graduating. It was the goal of Beijing to wipe out the use of Cantonese in a place where it's natively spoken. This isn't a perfect metaphor, but it would kind of be like if the American government tried to eliminate African-American vernacular. It's clearly targeting one group of people, and what they're trying to eliminate is culture, identity, power, and history. This hasn't sat well with young Hong Kongers, which is both surprising and not surprising. I am half Hong Kong Chinese, half Italian from a Catholic family. And if ever there was a place where people act right out of a sense of duty, guilt, not wanting to make your parents mad, and generally because you are predisposed to bottling up all your feelings and discomfort, Hong Kong is the place for you. The airport in Hong Kong will tell you everything you need to know about why. When you arrive, every single warning and rule is very cute. In the bathroom, the signs telling you not to flush certain things down the toilet show you a smiling tampon. Warnings not to leave your luggage unattended show you a happy smiling suitcase. Young Hong Kongers were so apolitical for so long because to be a Hong Konger was to live in this weird frictionless existence where efficiency and cooperation were woven into the culture. It's what China's now trying to co-opt and what young Chinese protesters are leveraging in their fight for freedom. China, meanwhile, is trying to exploit some of this confusion about the relationship between the two to make it look like Hong Kong is just a wayward sheep that has left the flock. Is it one country but two systems? Is Hong Kong a country? How many countries are in this country? Are Hong Kongers Chinese? Are Chinese people Chinese? Are all Chinese the same? And I understand that this is confusing, and I also know that I might have better luck teaching a dog to stand on its hind legs than I can to get a room full of white people to successfully differentiate between Asians. But I appreciate you trying. Because the answer isn't simple. Hong Kong, for instance, has its own passports, its own ID cards, its own flag and currency. It's not quite a separate country, but it's not quite China. Actually, they should really sit down with Taiwan and talk about how all of this feels. Maybe to understand it, you can look at it how a square can be a rectangle, but a rectangle can't be a square. Hong Kongers can be Chinese. Mainland Chinese can't really be Hong Kongers. And that's because they are fundamentally different in their beliefs and how they were raised. And that reason is because of the past 20 years of history. A Hong Konger, 35 years of history, I was lying about that math. A Hong Konger born in 1983 versus a mainland Chinese kid born in 1983 have vastly different perspectives on what their countries are like. One group thinks that Trump sucks because he's anti-democratic. The other group thinks that Trump sucks because he's anti-China. That might be the last thing that they agree on. But the tensions really manifested itself in the protests because you have state propagandists that are telling mainland Chinese that these people in Hong Kong are nothing but spoiled, unpatriotic brats. Young Chinese in Hong Kong want to be able to make subversive art that's critical of the government without being sent to a gulag. So there's a lot of daylight in those two positions. The key tension right now is a proposed extradition policy that, generally speaking, would allow Beijing to extradite Hong Kongers to the mainland for trial. Beijing is telling Hong Kongers that they have nothing to worry about, even though things like due process and human rights don't have the best record there. In the true civil liberties framing of this, China is the guy that tells you he doesn't want to wear a condom, but he'll totally pull out in time. And if you believe that, you are absolutely going to get fucked in more than one way. So the protesters have been organizing in amazing fashion. They've been using AirDrop, an end-to-end technology like Bluetooth, instead of logging on to the internet, which is trackable. They've been sharing maps via Bluetooth. They've been doing flash mobs to protest and block streets. They've all decided to dress the same and wear masks to cover their identity from the surveillance state, which has cameras everywhere. They've developed simple sign language hand signals so that they can signal in a crowded mass where to send helmets, masks, water, and first aid supplies to the front lines. They've coordinated a system where when the police throw tear gas, someone with a mask will run forward and extinguish it with a bottle of water. Other people carry umbrellas to block out cameras and projectiles thrown by the police. It's been leaderless, so it's been impossible to track. And it's been glorious to watch because it is so far confounded, one of the most oppressive regimes in the world. But a lot of people are obviously wondering how this is going to work out for Hong Kong, because who goes up against a superpower like China? The answer, I hope, is that it's young Hong Kongers, that they'll win. There are people, particularly in the West, who are taking a grim view of all this. They're wondering what the over-under is before the Panzer tanks roll across the strait, down to Morrison Hill Road, and into Victoria Park, where I used to run around the track as a kid. There's a fear, and it's not misplaced, that this will end with a lot of dead Hong Kongers, and no more Hong Kong as we know it. In my own family, we've put our last home up for sale. My younger cousins are moving to Japan, and my older relatives will probably stay to wait and see. But this little island that's held my childhood memories could be gone by next year. And I find in thinking about this, one of the hardest parts is that as an American, I can't take as much solace as I want to because I look at what's happening here. There was a video going around on the internet that showed Hong Kong protesters holding up an American flag and singing the Star Spangled Banner. I took one look, I closed my eyes, and I said, I love you, fam, but this ain't it. Because in our country, if you go to a football game and you kneel while that song is being sung, people think you should be pulled out of the stands and beaten. And as painful as it is to watch Hong Kong in turmoil and to watch its very democratic existence threatened, it hurts even more to know that the idea that a free and democratic United States is a little bit of a fantasy. So all I know is that the Beijing government might be powerful, but so is the desire to be free. And I don't know if you're a cynic or if you're a realist for betting on the brutal, heavily militarized superpower. But I'm betting my Hong Kong dollars to dim sum that if anybody can fuck with Beijing, it's at least two generations of super smart, highly driven, success-obsessed kids who have also spent their entire life collaboratively working for the greater good of their home. The protest slogan in Hong Kong is Be Water, which you can try and roll a tank over water, and you might get stuck in it, or it might get everything else wet.
Kim Belware grew up in Kalamazoo and is a reporter for the Washington Post who's quarantined in Chicago. And that's that. That's the Machete Audio Magazine for July 18th, 2020. Thank you for listening. Leah Munsey produces the paper Machete. I do too, Christopher Pyatt. Our audio engineer, Jacob Serio, puts up with both of us. He's a real Gen Z trooper that way. If you've enjoyed what you've heard on this show and would like to become a monthly donor, please visit thepapermachete.org/support. Also, if you rate and review us on iTunes, more fans might find us, and fewer puppies will die. Here's one more from Jem Tree. And good night, Mrs. Steinberg, wherever you are.
So they glossing, but I heard God calling. Gems on your market, said no halting. Yeah, light is costing, but I'd rather keep flossing. Stay clean, no exhaustion till the dreams start bossing. But it seems false prophet if you think I've fallen. No way, you're right here to stay. Bet I do it in your face. Bet I'm proving what I say. Yeah, I'm choosing to be great all day. Yeah, yeah, I'm living for me. Good fruit on my plate, I'm gonna partake. Nothing different, just let me. Why you tripping without a give? Nothing different, just let me live. Why you tripping now? Nothing different, just let me live. Why you tripping without a give? Nothing different, just let me live. Why you tripping? It's a choice to live for something. And I got a voice, got that shit thumping. No, it's pretty low, I'm from the country. Everywhere I go, I feed them something. Robitussin, got you cussing, so disgusting. But you're done, you don't eat that up in your corner. Can't be poor. Loving myself, I'm wealthy. My spirit never felt so healthy. Keep showing myself I'm worthy. Quit letting that same shit hurt me. Turn me on when you doubt me. I only want family around me. Go handle all of this business. And I got squad at my day. I'll be a witness for some love. I'll be a witness. For some love, I'll be a witness. For some love, I'll be a witness. I'll be a witness. For some love, I'll be a witness. For some love. witness for some love. I'll be a witness. Hey, my dear friend, just let me live. Why you tripping with all I give? My dear friend, just let me live. Why you tripping now?
Thanks, y'all, for listening. Again, my name is Jim Tree.